भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो 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 भगवते वासुदेवाय
Amanitvam Adambitvam Ahimsa Shantya Arjavam Acharya Pasanam Shaksham Staryam Atma Vinigraha Indriyarteshu Vairagam Anahamkara Evacha Janna Mithyu Jara Vyati Duka Dosham Darshanam Asatya Anadishvanga Putradhara Viharishu Nityam Cha Sam Chitatvam Ishtanishtapapatishu Mai Chanyena Yogena Bhaktir Avya Vicharani Vivita Desha Sevitvam Arthir Jana Samasini Adhyatma Jnana Nityatvam Tatva Jnanartha Darshanam Etaj Jnanam Iti Gautam Arjanam Yatvatam Yuta. Translation. Humility, righteousness, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and philosophical search for the absolute truth, all these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be, is ignorance. I'll start reading the commentary. It's long, I won't read the whole thing. I'll read a little bit of the time and we can talk about it. This process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being the interaction of the field of activity, but actually this is the real process of knowledge. If one accepts this process, then the possibility of approaching the absolute truth exists. This is not the interaction of the 24 elements, as described before. This is actually the means to get out of the entanglement of those elements. The embodied soul is entrapped by the body, which is a casing made of 24 elements. The process of knowledge is described here as the means to get out of these. Of all the descriptions of the process of knowledge, the most important is described in the first line of the 11th verse. Mayi chananya yogena bhaktir avyabhicharanani. The process of knowledge terminates in unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. So if one does not approach or is not able to approach the transcendental service of the Lord, then the other 19 items are of no particular value. But if one takes to devotional service and full Krishna consciousness, the other 19 items automatically develop within him. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, yas yasti bhaktir bhagavat yakinshana savaya gunai stakta samasate sura. All the good qualities of knowledge develop in one who has attained the stage of devotional service. The principle of accepting the spiritual master is mentioned in the 8th verse is essential even for one who takes the devotional service, it is most important. Transcendental life begins when one accepts a bona fide spiritual master. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, clearly states here that this process of knowledge is the actual path. Anything speculated beyond this is nonsense. As for knowledge outlined here, the items may be analyzed as follows. Humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of taking orders from others. Material conception of life makes us very eager to receive honor from others. But from the point of view of a man in perfect knowledge, who knows that he is not this body, anything honor or dishonor pertaining to this body is useless. One should not be hankering after this material deception. People are very anxious to be famous for their religion, and consequently sometimes it is found that without understanding the principles of religion, one enters into some group which is not actually following religious principles, and then wants to advertise himself as a religious mentor. As for actual advancement in spiritual science, one should have a test to see how far he is progressing. He can judge by these items. Namaste, Sarasati Devi Gauravani, Jajanini, Vishesha, Sanivari, Paske, Chari, Satari, Jai Shri Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Adhidhi, Kedarhani, Shri Vasili, Gauri, Bhakti, Vita. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
This is a very instructive verse from Bhagavad Gita. Well, Krishna describes what is actual knowledge. He explains, Srila Prabhupada explains, excuse me, in the commentary, that the knowledge described here is not the interaction of the 24 elements, as described before. In other words, it's not knowledge which comes from understanding the nature of matter. It is knowledge which culminates in understanding the nature of spirit. All of these things that Krishna describes as knowledge, they ultimately culminate, as Srila Prabhupada says, Prabhupada says not culminate, he says terminate. He says they terminate in unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. The process of knowledge terminates in unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. He quotes the verse, Yashasti Bhaktir Bhagavad Chikinchana, Sadaigamas Dhamma Samasate Sara, Parava Bhaktasipato Mahaguna Manorutinasati Dhamitobuhi. This verse is a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, fifth canto, which describes that process of knowledge, ultimately all the good qualities of the demigods, such as knowledge, religion, and renunciation, they automatically become manifest in one who is engaged in unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada would many times quote this verse, explaining that devotional service automatically produces all good qualities and automatically situates one in transcendental knowledge. Vasudevi Bhagavati Janayasu Bhakti Yoga Paryojata Janayasu Vairagyam Ginam Chayada Haitukam. That by rendering devotional service to the Supreme Lord Vasudeva, one automatically acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from this world. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada explains in the commentary to this verse that these processes of knowledge that he's described here, Krishna is described. Humility, pridelessness, tolerance, nonviolence, simplicity. The processes by which one should ultimately culminate in realizing his eternal relationship with Krishna. One must practice humility, one must practice tolerance, but a devotee of the Lord, if he actually engages in devotional service of the Lord with resolute determination and with a selfless desire to please the Lord, automatically, these are all his criteria, humility, pridefulness, nonviolence, they all become manifest in that person, automatically. Because these are not only described as knowledge, but they're qualities or symptoms of the soul. It's described elsewhere how there are different types of knowledge. One is called Pratyaksha, which Srila Prabhupada is specifically explaining here. It's knowledge which comes out of the senses, when the senses come in contact with the objects of the senses. Sense perception. Srila Prabhupada gives the example that if we look at the sun with the naked eye, it may appear that the sun is a ball in the sky about this big. But when we hear from authorities that actually know the sun is a very large planet, much larger than this one, then we understand through knowledge. So first, the sense perception is limited. We have imperfect senses. That is the process of pratyaksha, the sense perception. And the next stage of acquiring knowledge is called paroksha. Paroksha means hearing from authorities. We just used the example. We hear from somebody who has superior understanding, whatever the knowledge may be of, whether it may be of matter, whether it may be of spirit. But by hearing from somebody who has superior knowledge, then our knowledge can increase. So that's pratyaksha, paroksha, and aparoksha. Aparoksha is described as the knowledge obtained by realization of the self, self-realization by the process of philosophical speculation, which doesn't actually, which actually does not culminate in devotional service to Krishna. It simply culminates in understanding of the self as being spiritual, not material. That is not complete renunciation, that is not complete self-realization. But it is partial self-realization when one knows that actually he has nothing to do with his body. He's actually a spirit soul, and he's transcendental to the physical body. So aparoksha is that knowledge which is acquired by this type of self-realization, that the living entity comes to realize that he's detached from matter, and therefore he lives a life of renunciation and detachment from the material world. There are many ascetics, yogis, who actually achieve this level of realization, and they live a very austere life, not gratifying the demands of the senses. And the knowledge that is obtained by this method is called aparoksha. Then it's described there is a higher platform of knowledge, which is called adhoksaja. Adhoksaja is knowledge of the transcendental realm, the spiritual realm, which cannot be approached by philosophical speculation. It cannot be approached by mental speculation. It cannot be approached by these senses, by this limited mind. Srila Prabhupada would oftentimes quote the verse Atakshi Krishna Namadi Nabhavid Grahim Indriyai Seva Mukehi Jivadao Swayam Evasparatida, that Krishna cannot be understood with blunt material senses. He can only be understood with spiritual senses which have become purified by engaging them in transcendental service of the Lord. Beginning Seva Mukehi Jivado, beginning with the tongue. Tongue is Jiva. And Jiva, we control the tongue by speaking about Krishna, by tasting Krishna prasadam. And when we control our tongue by engaging our tongue and our senses in the service of the Lord, the senses become purified, and Krishna can be understood with purified senses. Srila Prabhupada oftentimes used to quote the verse from the Brahma Samhita, which describes how, unless one eyes are anointed with the salve of love of Godhead, one cannot actually see Krishna. One can only see Krishna with eyes which are anointed with the salve of love, purified eyes. When actually one has intense love for the Lord, then the Lord reveals Himself. That is in Hoksaja. By no physical, mental effort can we actually achieve this level of knowledge. It comes down to us. By our determination to understand that which is beyond our limited sense perception. So this is described as the fourth stage of knowledge. And this stage of knowledge reveals to the living entity the understanding not only that he is not physical, he is not the material body, and that he is not these temporary senses, but it also reveals to him that he is his eternal spiritual soul, and who resides in a realm which is beyond the temporary physical world, which is the expanse of the spiritual world, Vaikuntha. There is a level of knowledge which is even beyond this level of Adhoksaja. And this level of knowledge which is beyond Adhoksaja is called a Prakriti. A Prakriti actually is described as Jnana Sunya Bhakti. We oftentimes give this example. It's devotion to Krishna, but devotion to the Supreme Lord Krishna, which is devoid of the knowledge of Krishna's supremacy. Now one may say, how is the highest knowledge, Jnana-sunya, which literally means without knowledge? But actually, the highest knowledge that what the living entity can achieve by the same token, as in the same way as in Hoksaja is revealed, this Jnana-sunya bhakti, this understanding of the Supreme Lord, devoid of the understanding of His supremacy and of His majestic opulence, is also revealed into the heart of the devotee who desires to serve the Lord in one of the primary relationships with the Lord in the transcendental realm of the spiritual world of the Loka Vrindavan. Jnana Sunya Bhakti means that one actually becomes an eternal associate of the Lord, where one serves the Supreme Lord as a friend, as a parent, or as a lover. One may have parental affection for the Lord, one may have friendly relationships with the Lord, but those relationships are not disturbed by knowledge of Krishna's supremacy. Because as soon as one has knowledge of Krishna's supremacy, then immediately one's devotion is crippled. It's very difficult to think of Krishna as one's son. It's very difficult to jump on Krishna's back, which is oftentimes used as an example, as Krishna's friend. If one actually has to simultaneously entertain the conception that this is God, how could such a reverential attitude, which is awakened, which is evoked and sustained by knowledge of God's nature, just like Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna revealed the universal form to Arjuna, he revealed a very wonderful form. Krishna showed to Arjuna how ultimately he was everything within creation. He had unlimited bodies, unlimited faces. He saw all of creation within the body of the Lord. And then when Arjuna saw this feature of the Lord, he became so awestruck that he immediately began to offer his apologies to the Lord. He said, "Forgive me. Previously, we sat on the same bedstead together. Previously, I put my head in your lap. Previously, we shared food from the same plate. I was so familiar with you. But now when I see this form," and he was begging forgiveness because he was temporarily awestruck that his friend had such a majestic feature, and therefore it immediately crippled his natural friendly relationship that he has with Krishna. So that's an example given right in the Bhagavad Gita of how knowledge of the Lord's supremacy and knowledge of his majestic opulences cripples this type of devotion, which is manifest in devotees of the Lord who have awakened spontaneous attraction to Krishna. The knowledge they have, that sambandha jnana, that knowledge they have of Krishna is that I know that Krishna is my friend, or Nanda Maharaj knows that Krishna is his son, and even if Uddhava comes and tells Nanda Maharaj, who is lamenting for Krishna's absence, he says, "Sister Nanda Maharaj, why are you lamenting? Don't you know your son is God?" And Nanda Maharaj, of course, objects, you know, how can you make such a statement? How can my son be God? And my son, he steals. God is, gave this example before when we were talking about Vrindavan, we were talking about the Damodar Lila. That Nanda Maharaj, in no way can be his convictions of Krishna being his son cannot be any way disrupted by anybody's attempt to describe him as anything else except his son. And even if somebody describes him as somebody else other than his son, as somebody who's very great, he just simply thinks, oh, my son is great. He doesn't stop to think and separate the understanding of my son from the other understanding that has been exposed. No, that's my son. As the example that is given by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, here's the example when Mother Yasoda, she sees the demigods, when Krishna is returning from the pasturing grounds, the demigods are hovering overhead and they're throwing flower petals on Krishna. And Mother Yasoda is thinking, oh, how wonderful is my son. Just see the demigods are throwing flowers on him. And she still thinks that this is my son. And he gives the example, he says, just like a mother of the president, even though he may be the president, she still thinks this is my son. So in the same way, Mother Yasoda, she does never, her conception of Krishna being her son is never disrupted or disturbed by any apparent manifestation of majestic opulence or superpowers or whatever it may be. When Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill, what does Mother Yasoda think? She thinks that Krishna is struggling to hold the hill and he hasn't eaten for days and he needs to be fed. And that's how she thinks, because that's her motherly affection. So this is the highest stage of knowledge, a prakriti, which is called Jnana Samya Bhakti, which is the knowledge aspired for by a devotee of the Lord. He aspires to actually to achieve this knowledge, but as we had as described here, this type of knowledge culminates or terminates in unalloyed devotion, the process of knowledge terminates in unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Lord. It terminates, in other words, when one knows Krishna, Vedaishcha Sayavara, Aham Eva Veda, Vedanta Veda Eva Jaham. When one knows Krishna, then Krishna says, I am the source of all Vedic wisdom. Yasmin Vigyate Samyatam Vigyatam Bhavanti. When Krishna becomes known, then everything else that needs to become known also becomes known. Because Krishna is everything. When Krishna says, I am the source of the material and spiritual worlds, everything is emanating from me, the wise who know this perfectly, they engage in my devotional service and worship me with all of their hearts. When one knows, actually when one knows Krishna, everything else that needs to be known becomes revealed to him. Because Krishna lifts the illusory veil, the illusory curtain, which is obstructing our relationship, our eternal relationship with the Lord. It's not that when one knows Krishna, immediately he knows how many grains of sand are on the beach, or how many names are in the phone book. This is not relevant. He knows whatever is needed to be known. Krishna gives him, reveals to him everything he needs to know. So, therefore, these different types of processes of knowledge, which are described here, they are meant to bring one to that platform of unalloyed devotional service, service rendered for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord without any personal motivation. I was just reading recently an example. It's an example from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Radharani. She is speaking one verse. She says, if a gopi envious of me satisfies Krishna and Krishna desires her service, then I will immediately become a maidservant of that gopi, and only then will my happiness be awakened. And there is a commentary to this verse, which is explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's an interesting commentary. It's a story from the Padma Purana, which Srila Prabhupada describes how one actually has to render service without personal motivation, without consideration of themselves. And he uses the example from, I think it's Padma Purana, it's also in the Aditya Purana. It's a story about a Brahmin and a Brahmani. About this Brahmin and his wife. The two of them, they went together down to the river to take bath. And while they were down at the river taking bath, the husband was also a leper. Excuse me, he had leprosy. And anyways, they went to the river to take bath. And the Brahmana, he saw a very beautiful woman. Her name was Lakshahari. She had an effulgence which was greater than millions of diamonds. And when the husband saw the woman, he became very much attracted to her. The woman actually was a prostitute. So the husband and the wife, they returned home. And the husband was very despondent. And the wife asked the husband, why is it that you are so despondent? What is it? What are you thinking about? And the husband didn't want to say what was on his mind. But the wife was persistent and she asked, what was it? Was it the woman that you saw at the river? And the husband said, actually, yes, I was very attracted to her. And she said, oh, you want to enjoy with her? He said, yes, in my mind I want to enjoy with her. So the story goes on to describe how the wife of that Brahmana, she was poor, they were both poor, but she, although she was from an aristocratic family, she decided she would go to the house of that prostitute and begin rendering all kinds of service in the house of the prostitute. And every day she would go, and she would clean the house, she would do many other things. She was trying to get the attention of the prostitute, the mistress of the house. And she would do this without any remuneration whatsoever. And finally, one day, the mistress of the house, she noticed all these things were getting done. She asked others in the house, who is doing this? And they told her that actually there was one wife of a Brahmin. She's coming every day. She's trying to get your attention. She wants to speak to you. And so the mistress, the prostitute, said, let her come. I will speak to her. So the following day, when the wife of the Brahmin came to the mistress asked, I heard that you wanted to speak to me. What is it? And the wife of the Brahmin, she says, it's my husband. He wants to enjoy with you. And I've come to try to request this of you, that please satisfy the desires of my husband. So the prostitute, she said, okay, very good. Why don't the two of you come tomorrow for dinner? And she invited both of them to come to her home. And the wife of the Brahmin went back and told her husband, you've invited tomorrow to go to the house of the prostitute for dinner. So, naturally, he was very eager to go to accept the invitation. On the following day, the prostitute made all kinds of fancy preparations to serve to this Brahmin and Brahmini, husband and wife. She But she took different preparations. She made one type of preparation was very sattvic. It was mahaprasadam, very nice ghee, opulent sabjis and vegetables. And it was placed in a banana leaf plate and in a clay pot. It was put on the table. And next to it was a gold plate and a silver pot. And inside were all kinds of very rajasic type foods. Very foods in the mode of passion. We don't need to go on to describe the characteristics of foods. Unmentionable foods. And she put this in the gold plate and the silver pot. So when the husband and the wife came for dinner, the mistress of the house invited them, please come in. Look what I prepared for you. Look at all of this wonderful food. Please, according to your desire, please sit down and take whatever you wish to accept. So the Brahmin immediately sat down, and even though the food was on a banana leaf plate and a clay pot, he began eating the very nice mahaprasadam. And he ate to his full satisfaction. And after he finished eating, then the prostitute said to the Brahmana, she said, just see, you're by nature sattvic, and you're attracted to that which is sattvic. He said, look at your wife. She is sattvic. I am vijasic. I am just like this gold plate and steel and silver pot. You see all those foods in me? That is like me. Why are you interested in me? Just simply because I have an attractive plate, silver plate, gold plate and silver pot around me. Why aren't you attracted to your wife? She has all good qualities. She is really sattvic. You have a natural attraction for that which is sattvic. Just see how you sat down and you accepted this sattvic food as opposed to this rajasic food. So when the Brahmana heard this, he became so overwhelmed. And actually, he began crying. He realized that, he said, you are my guru, I've accepted you. He realized he'd made such a terrible thought in his mind of wanting to enjoy. But the wife conquered her husband because she was selfless in her motivation and wanted to satisfy the husband. So in the same way, and therefore she was able to conquer him. Ultimately, she was able to conquer him. I think that also there's another story in this connection. But that same Brahmana, as we said, he was a leper, and on the way back from the house of the prostitute, he actually happened to touch the body of Markandeya Rishi, who became very, very angry and cursed him to die by sunrise. So the wife, because she was so devoted to her husband, she decided she would immediately take up severe austerities and penances to petition the three predominating deities of Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, and Lord Shiva to make them come by dint of her austerities so that she could request from them that the sun would not rise and her husband would not die. So because of her severe austerities, the predominating deities appeared before her. And they told her, actually, your husband, not only will your husband not be died, but he'll be cured from leprosy. This story is also told to illustrate the point of the selflessness. The selflessness of the service rendered without any personal motivation. So, these are examples. Of course, the examples given in the scripture, one may question what is the validity of behaving in such a way. But just see, by these examples which are given in the Padma Purana, how the husband was ultimately conquered by the selflessness of the wife. So these examples are given to illustrate how a devotee of the Lord must be selfless. He must not have any personal interest. Whatever is pleasing to Krishna, that is what is pleasing to me. And these examples were given as the example of Radharani. She was actually saying, if a gopi is envious of me, but if she can satisfy Krishna and Krishna desires her, then I will go to her house and I will become her maidservant, and then my happiness will be awakened. Therefore, illustrating the example that what is it that brings happiness to the devotee of the Lord? The devotee of the Lord ultimately becomes happy in whatever way that one's worshipable object is happy. That makes them happy. If that comes from me or if it comes from somebody else, if somebody else can make them happy, then let me become the servant of that person who can make them happy. Why do I have to? In other words, one of the characteristics of knowledge which is described here is humility. Humility is avanitvam, adhambitvam. One of them is pridelessness, and the other is lack of ostentation. In other words, we have a tendency we want to get recognition, we want to get a position of prestige. But actually, if the devotee of the Lord is genuinely humble and is prepared to render service to someone who can please Krishna more than he can please them, by taking that humble position, that is how we get Krishna's attention. Krishna even uses this example. I think he used the example in the ninth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the story of Maharaj Ambarish, when he tells Durvasa Muni, as a chaste woman brings her gentle husband under control by her service, in the same way, the pure devotees of the Lord, who are equal to everyone, who are always attached to me within the core of their hearts, they control me. They bring me under their control. So, Krishna also says to Durvasa Muni, he says that when the devotees of the Lord bring me under their control, I am conquered by them. And he says, what to speak of my devotee? Those who are devotees of my devotees, they are very, very dear to me. This is the principle of how actually to get the attention of the Supreme Lord. Srila Prabhupada would oftentimes give the example, love me, love my dog. He would say that actually if a dog is very, very dear to the master, and if you want to get the master's attention, then do some service for the dog, to the dog. Or he would also give the example of the son. The son is very dear to his father. If you want to get the father's attention, then render some service to the son. So in the same way, if we want to get Krishna's attention, we should actually take the humble position. I can't please Krishna. What qualification do I have to directly please the Supreme Lord? And therefore, Srila Prabhupada explains here in the first part of this commentary that two principles are that ultimately knowledge culminates in unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Personality, or terminates in unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the other essential quality for attaining knowledge is that the principle of accepting a spiritual master, as mentioned in the 8th verse, is essential. Even for one who takes the devotional service, it is most important. Transcendental life begins when one accepts a bona fide spiritual master. In other words, accepting the principle that in order to satisfy the Lord, one actually has to try to please the devotee of the Lord. And that even the more time removed that we become, Gopi Bharta Pada Kamalayor Dasa 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 Anudasa. That is the principle that was taught by Lord Chaitanya. That we will become the servant of Krishna, the maintainer of the gopis, by becoming the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. Anyone who can please Krishna, that even Radharani herself, who gives the greatest pleasure to Krishna, she says that if somebody who's envious of me, if a gopi envious of me, satisfies Krishna, and Krishna desires her, I will become her maidservant, go to her house. And then my happiness, that will awaken my happiness. It will be him. So that is the principle behind unalloyed devotional service, is by cultivating the sincere desire to please the Lord by following the instructions and by rendering service to the devotee of the Lord. And therefore, these are two processes which are explained here for obtaining knowledge, which is unalloyed devotion to me, one of them, and approaching a bona fide spiritual master. As we said, there are many of them here. Humility, we spoke a little bit about humility, that if one is genuinely humble and he's not looking for any prestige, we see in the examples given in Chaitanya Charitamrita, so many examples of how Lord Chaitanya is defeated by the humility of his devotees. Of course, these qualities are displayed generally in the society of devotees. When we speak about humility, then generally we think of how devotees are humble towards one another. They're always, Srila Prabhupada said, when a devotee approaches another devotee, he always addresses him as Prabhu, Master. That is what oftentimes you'll hear, the word Prabhu, when addressing somebody else. It's to help us to cultivate the mentality that actually I should be a servant of another devotee. Srila Prabhupada also gave the example, and it's, of course, for many of you who are, have to work in such an aggressive world and have to, if you try to display humility in your office, try to display humility with your with your colleagues, you know, and oftentimes devotees are asking me this question, how to be humble? I'll just be raked across the coals. It's such an aggressive world out there. And Prabhupada would oftentimes, he'd give the example, he says, a lamb at home and a lion on the chase. He said that, yes, at home amongst other devotees, we should display these qualities of humility. But sometimes, under certain circumstances, sometimes we have to be a little bit aggressive for the service of the Lord. So therefore, sometimes we may, in dealing with people who are very proud, very aggressive, very exploitative, if we simply tolerate and become humble, and then they'll simply take advantage and exploit us more and more and more. So obviously, these qualities of humility are more recognizable and are demonstrated in the society of devotees. Because in the society of devotees, every devotee is always thinking himself as, he never thinks himself as superior. Just like Prabhupada one time, he displayed this quality. I remember a lecture Prabhupada was giving in Uppsala University in Sweden. I wasn't there, but I listened to the recording many times. And Prabhupada was talking about four classes of society, and he was describing how the Brahmin is first class man, and first class because of what the other classes are dependent upon his teachings for enlightenment and to give spiritual direction for human society. So one man in the audience, he began challenging Srila Prabhupada. He said, you're speaking about first class men, and look at you, you're sitting on a big fancy seat, you have so many flowers around you, you have so many flowers around your neck, so you think you're a first class man? And you're trying to look for praise from us? And the man was very challenging. The Prabhupada, there was total silence. We couldn't hear anything. Couldn't hear a pin drop. The Prabhupada, devotees were looking at Prabhupada, they saw a tear coming from his eye. The Prabhupada said, I am not first class man. He said, I am fifth class man. He said, because I am servant of the other four classes. In other words, Prabhupada showed his genuine humility. He didn't think himself superior. He thought himself as a servant of everyone who was present. I've come to serve you, to tell you about that which you have forgotten. Prabhupada was always taking that position, seeing himself as a servant of others. In amongst the association of devotees, these qualities of humility are the most attractive feature. How a devotee always thinks himself as humble, unworthy of praise and recognition. And here Prabhupada says, humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. This material conception of life makes us very eager to receive honor from others. But from the point of view of a man in perfect knowledge, who knows that he is not this body, anything, honor or dishonor, pertaining to this body is useless. One should not be hankering after this material deception. So, humility is automatically manifested in a devotee of the Lord. But at the same time, for those who have not come to unalloyed devotional service to the Lord, you should practice humility. Practice means that we should not look for this type of recognition and prestige in the society of devotees. We should look for opportunities to render service to other devotees. But we should not be eager to take credit. We should always give whatever credit that we do that is pleasing to the Lord, as that credit comes because of the superior order that we received from Krishna's devotees to perform that service. In this way, a devotee is free from pride. So these are examples. I like this verse. It gives many different characteristics of a devotee and how one should actually aspire to be situated in resolute, unalloyed devotional service to the Lord, and how by practicing these different types of processes of knowledge that ultimately one can actually please and satisfy the Lord and actually know the Lord as He is. Krishna says, only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am, standing directly before you, Arjuna. Only then can you enter into the mysteries of understanding me. He said, it's not simply by austerities alone, not by Vedic sacrifices, not by charities, accepting vows. These things in of themselves will not actually enable you to know me as I am. It's by your unflinching, unalloyed desire to please me and by unflinching devotional service. Then Krishna reveals. That revelation is the highest knowledge by which the Lord actually reveals himself to the devotee and accepts that devotee to be as good as himself, not only as good as himself, but actually Krishna becomes subordinate to that devotee. As Krishna says, just as a chaste wife brings her gentle husband under control, in the same way the pure devotees who are equal to everyone and who are attached to me within the core of their hearts, they also bring me under their control. Krishna says, not only is my devotee equal to me, but actually I become subordinate to that devotee. I become a servant to that devotee. I want to satisfy the innermost desires within the core of the heart of that devotee. Such is the power of unflinching devotional service to the Lord. So, as I said, certainly, this many pages, I'm not going to be able to read all of these qualities or principles of knowledge. I've only read a few, and maybe I can stop to see if anyone has any questions that they would like to ask about anything discussed up until this point. Or comments? Yes.
Yes, you have explained the stages of knowledge. The first one, I couldn't get it well. The first
Excuse
stage
me?
Of knowledge. The first stage of knowledge you explained. I want to explain the first stage.
First stage of knowledge.
Yeah.
Pratyaksha.
Pratyaksha.
Uh-huh. Yes. Pratyaksha is sense perception. Pratyaksha, paroksha, aparoksha, vidhoksacha, and aprakrita. But we also explained how pratyaksha is faulty. We generally trust our senses, but Krishna's made it very clear in Bhagavad Gita. You can't see me with those eyes, Arjuna. I've given you the eyes with which you can see me. Or as Lord Brahma says, Premanjana Chirita Bhakti Valochanina Santaksadai Vididiyeshu Loki Hanti. Ones whose eyes are anointed with the sorrow of love of Godhead, they can see Krishna. So it's not with these eyes that one can see Krishna. Prabhupada would oftentimes give the example, he says, you cannot even see that which is subtle, what to speak of that which is spiritual. subtle material energies. Krishna says, Bhumara Pono Loba Yukamano Buddha Ivacha Ahankara Vinya Pakita Ashtata. Five gross elements and three subtle elements. Mind, intelligence, false ego. He said, you cannot see even that which is subtle. You can see, understand it by its symptoms. So in the same way, we can't see the soul, but we understand the presence of the soul by its symptoms. Desire and life. So we can't even see that which is subtle. So how are we possibly going to be able to see Krishna, who has Ishwara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Ananya Arya Govinda Savakarana Karana? How are we going to see Krishna, who has a body of Satchidananda Vigraha, completely spiritual? We can't see by Pratyaksha. If we want to know Krishna, Pratyaksha will not bring us there. So therefore, Prabhupada establishes that point in the very beginning, that this process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being the interaction of the field of activity. This is pratyaksha. But actually, it is not. This is not real knowledge, pratyaksha. Then, of course, there's paroksha. Paroksha can also be within the field of activities, by aspiring to hear from others about material science, material mathematics, or whatever it may be. That's still within the realm of the 24 elements, and therefore... But if we hear from authorities who understand the spiritual science, by that hearing, that can actually bring us to the higher platform by hearing about transcendence. Then we can come to that plaque by hearing. Hearing, Srila Prabhupada says, hearing is very compelling. When one hears the absolute truth, the transcendental science of devotional service, or Lord Krishna's instructions, which are coming from the Supreme Lord Himself, says, hearing means acting. It's very compelling. If we actually hear, then we have to act. Otherwise, we haven't heard. He says, otherwise, it's just simply listening, which is a little vibration that takes place in the ear. But it's not really hearing. But if we actually heard, this Krishna says to Arjuna, now hear from me, tat shrinu. Now hear from me how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. So he says, tat shrinu. Hear from me, Krishna. Now Krishna says to Arjuna. When Arjuna hears from Krishna, what happens? Arjuna, he came to that realization. You are Param Brahma, Pavitam. You are the Supreme Lord. And when Arjuna realized by hearing from Krishna, what did he do? He fought the battlefield of Kurukshetra. But he fought in Krishna consciousness, in full remembrance of the Lord. So hearing, if one actually hears the transcendental subject matter, it's very compelling. One has to act on it. Otherwise, one hasn't heard. Either one hasn't heard because the message hasn't been... It hasn't been given in a transparent way, or one hasn't heard because he's still resisting and still wanting to keep his independence from Krishna, and still... So he thought, Prabhupada explains that it's just simply listening, a little vibration going on in the ear, but it's not actual hearing. A real hearing is hearing from Krishna, just like in the... In the 18th chapter, there's a very wonderful verse I oftentimes quote it. Krishna says to Arjuna, he says, Chetasa sarva karmani mayi sanyasya matpara buddhi yoga mupashritya mach chitta satatam bhava. He says, and all activities just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. Prabhupada explains in the commentary, when one acts in Krishna consciousness, he does not act as the master of the world. Just like a servant, one should act fully under the direction of the Supreme Lord. A servant has no individual independence. He acts only on the order of the master. A servant acting on behalf of the Supreme Master is unaffected by profit and loss. He simply discharges his duty faithfully in terms of the order of the Lord. Now one may argue that Arjuna was acting under the personal direction of Krishna, but when Krishna is not present, how should one act? says, if one acts according to the direction of Krishna in this book, as well as under the guidance of the representative Krishna, then the result will be the same. It indicates that one has no goal in life save and except acting in Krishna consciousness, just to satisfy Krishna. And while working in that way, one should think of Krishna only. I've been appointed to discharge this particular duty by Krishna. While acting in such a way, one naturally has to think of Krishna. This is perfect Krishna consciousness. One should, however, note that after doing something whimsically, he should not offer the result to the Supreme Lord. That sort of duty is not in the devotional service of Krishna consciousness. One should act according to the order of Krishna. This is a very important point. That order of Krishna comes through disciplic succession from the bona fide spiritual master. Therefore, the spiritual master's order should be taken as the prime duty of life. If one gets a bona fide spiritual master and acts according to his direction, then one's perfection of life and Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. There's more to this. Hiri. That is real paroksha. That is real hiri.
Regarding humility, I understood practicing humility in the society of devotees is a bit different than in the real world.
So, well, let's not use the word real.
Okay. What's that different? I mean, do we need to keep two things in our mind?
Excuse me?
So do we need to keep two different principles, two different set of principles regarding humility?
It depends on the circumstance. Actually, sometimes humility could also be very attractive to a non-devotee. It depends on the circumstance that one is working in. I mean, I'm sure anyone who's listening to Barack Obama's campaign speeches, he very oftentimes used the word, I am humbled. Of course. But he used it many times. I am humbled by your vote. I am humbled by your expectations of me. I am humbled by, So in other words, there is some, obviously if you used it so many times, there is some quality that is appreciated by humility, even though one may not be humble. But it depends on the circumstance that one is working in. I gave the example, a lamb at home, a lion on the chase. And Prabhupada actually used that quote specifically in reference to devotees when they go out to distribute his books. He said sometimes the devotee has to be a little aggressive to convince somebody to take a book. But his aggression to convince somebody is actually for the welfare of that person, and it's a desire to please Krishna, and he's actually because he wants that person to have an opportunity to come in contact with Krishna. So Prabhupada used the example a lion on the chase, but when he comes back at home, with lamb at home amongst others, then he shouldn't use that same aggression with devotees in the temple. So it depends on the circumstance that one finds himself in. I can't say at what time to display humility, at what time to not display humility. But if the mind is actually thinking that I am doing this for Krishna, then even if you have to be aggressive, it is humility, because you're humbling yourself to the Lord and to His devotee. That is real humility. That's the essence. Right. You're humbling yourself to their desires, and in order to protect their interests. Sometimes a devotee may have to be aggressive. Just like sometimes Prabhupada, if a person, a Mayavadi, would come and speak. Or I can even think of an example. There was one time Prabhupada was sitting in a room. Prabhupada would oftentimes, very aggressively, he would use the word rascal, referring to materialistic people, how they're rascals. And one man was challenging him. He said, Swamiji, this is not Samadarshana. You know, he was referring to Krishna's verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Vijayavanaya Sampane, Bhamani Gavi Haskini, Sumi Chagas, Papicha, Panita Samadarshana. A humble sage, by virtue of true wisdom, he sees with equal vision a gentle learned Brahmin, an elephant, a dog eater. So the man was challenging Prabhupada. He said, "You're not being Samadarshana. Why are you speaking so strongly?" And Prabhupada says, he said, "No, that's higher level." He said, "I am not on that platform. If I see that somebody is not following Krishna's instruction, is committing sinful activity," he said, "then I must call him rascal, because Krishna says rascal in Bhagavad Gita." He says, "But I do not discriminate. I will give Krishna's instructions to everyone. That is my samadarshana. I do not discriminate. If someone is a rascal, then I will say he is rascal, because I'm simply standing on the words of Krishna and Bhagavad Gita." So Prabhupada would sometimes be aggressive. Right? But who is he defending? He's defending Krishna's words. He says, "I stand firmly on Krishna's words." He says, "That is my samadarshana. I will do not discriminate. I will tell everyone what Krishna says." So that is humility. That is real humility. Is ultimately, is actually humbling ourselves to the order of the Lord and to the devotee of the Lord, and protecting their interests, even if we have to be sometimes a little aggressive. Does that answer your question? Therefore, a person in the business place, he may be thinking, "Yes, I want to, I want to give Lakshmi, I want to donate to Krishna." So he's thinking of Krishna in his work, but if he just lets everybody exploit him, "Oh, my dear sir, if you want to make no profit," and he doesn't make profit from anybody, and obviously, in the business world, if you want to make profit, you have to be a little aggressive. But he's thinking, so ultimately in his mind, he's thinking, "I want to offer to Krishna." This is an example also. All right. Thank you. We can stop here. Hare Krishna.
Prabhupada ki jai, Ranjana Swami ki jai, Om Premanande.
Hari Om.